Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, January the 16th, Martin Luther King Day, 2022. I got a couple of things I want to talk to Bill Katz about today. We'll be joined by Bill in just a second. Of course, Bill is the editor of Urgent Agenda. We chat with him once a week about what's going on in the country. Lots of stories about documents going on in the country right now. And the mayor of New York is down in Texas. So a lot to get into. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Let me put him on here and say hello, Bill. Did you happen to talk to Mayor Adams before he came down to El Paso?
I did not. No, Silvio, but I thought there are two things here that have to be considered. On the one hand, he speaks a lot of sense when he said that cities like New York need help in absorbing the illegal immigrants. But he conveniently forgets the fact that he was one of the people who supported New York City's self-designation as a sanctuary city. Remember that term? It's not being used too much anymore. But cities would very bravely say, we are a sanctuary city. We don't keep people out. Well, he's just found out what the meaning of that is. And New York is overloaded. It is the stories coming out of Manhattan in particular are bizarre. Immigrants and they are illegal. Look, I don't like the phrase either. I don't like the phrase. They're human beings, but they are here illegally, and they didn't have space for them. They didn't keep Oprah. They don't have the welcome wagon like in other places, and they put storing. And that's exactly the right word. Storing the immigrants in a luxury hotel in Times Square, right in the middle of the theater district, and the place is being turned into a chaotic situation. They don't like the food. They want other food. They want to live their own life the way they want to live it. And I guess they are paying the hotel an enormous amount of money, which should be going to the citizens of New York for a lot of needs, and should be going to the police department. And here he is on the border. Finally recognizing maybe that we have a crisis on our hands, and we do.
Right. I thought it was interesting, Bill, because you're right. New York City, I don't know if this mayor specifically, but for years, New York City, certainly under the previous mayor, kept saying that they were a sanctuary city, and they were criticizing. For example, you may remember that back in 2010 or 2011, Governor Abbott proposed in Texas something called SB4, which made it illegal for cities to be sanctuaries. And I remember when Governor Abbott and was criticized for that and called a bunch of names as well, racist among them. And mayors cities like New York and Philadelphia and Chicago were all in favor of sanctuary cities. I thought it was funny over at Powerline. There's a cartoon, Powerline being one of my favorite blogs. There's a cartoon that says, yes, we're a sanctuary city, but we are full, so we can't take any more people right now.
Right.
I think that says it all, that they're getting a taste of what it's like to have people in your city like this just coming in numbers. And I get a kick. I mean, here we in Texas, we get a kick out of Mayor Adams, Bill, because the mayor of Del Rio, Texas, which is a small little community on the border, maybe 15,000 people, not long ago, he was looking at 15,000 Haitians on the other side of the river, Bill, who wanted to cross over. So, we understand how Mayor Adams feels. But I still don't think they've gone the distance, Bill, and addressing the, you know, the person responsible for the problem, and that's the policies of President Biden. In other words, they keep talking of this as a federal problem, okay, but who's running the federal government, Bill?
That's exactly right. And what you have here is the situation where the tail really is wagging the dog, and that is that the Democratic Party is controlled by the political left, and that's what's really running things. And I would love to know exactly who is making these policies and directing the president or pressuring the president to adopt them. These are policies that can only hurt the United States. I cannot imagine someone who loves this country allowing this to happen. It is not only the overloading of cities, the destruction of budgets that should be used to help citizen children who are already here, but it's the atmosphere of fear and crime that's being created, and they don't seem to care. And I think they don't care because they really don't like their own country. These are real leftists. They're not liberals. And they seem to have inordinate power in Washington.
Right.
My hunch is that the previous Democratic administration, the Obama administration, is involved in this in some way, because many of these policies seem to have his fingerprints on them. But we are in trouble as a nation. You know, I've always said that one of the things the press does not do and should do is to monitor the embassies on Embassy Row, which is Massachusetts Avenue in Washington, and find out what they are sending back to their home countries in the way of observations about the United States. It's part of their work. It's a very important part of their work for them to assess America. And I would imagine the assessment is very bleak right now. Are we a country that can be depended on?
Right. Well, I think you're right. I think a lot of people are wondering that thing as well. I mean, they're sitting there, and you know, for me, it's interesting because if you go back, not that long ago, you go back to the second Bush administration or the second term of George W. Bush, it was people like Senator Biden who signed on or voted for the fence. Remember, President Bush wanted to put a fence. He was one of the ones who voted for the fence. Hillary Clinton the same way. Senator Schumer the same way. And if you go back and you listen to and you read their quotes, and again, this is not that long ago, they had a lot of quotes about the border and illegal immigration that made a lot of sense. They certainly sounded a lot like Donald Trump. Maybe not with the same language, but the content was very similar. And yet, look at where he's at now, which leads me to think, and I'm convinced more and more every day, as we will talk about in the documents, about these documents in a few minutes, I don't think President Biden is running this show. I really believe that, as you have suggested at times, maybe Obama, maybe somebody else, he's not doing it. Because this, what he's doing makes absolutely no sense. And I'll just give you another example. He goes down to Atlanta today to talk at the Martin Luther King church. And he once again makes up a story about how he used to go to a black church, Bill.
Yes, another made-up story. We have a congressman in New York who was just elected, named Santos, who made up his entire background, and it came out only after he was elected, and it's a major story. But the president makes up things almost every day. I mean, he claims to have done so many things in life. Well, and so has Hillary Clinton. They don't work out, and yet nobody in the press says, Mr. President, you've got to stop this. You've got to stop lying to us. The role of the press here is a sinister one. I think historians will regard it as extraordinarily dangerous for the country, and we should be having a national discussion on the role of the press, but we're not going to have it.
Right, but I mean, I just think it's, you know, the Dallas Morning News had an editorial. I sent it to you because I wanted you to see what other people were saying about Representative Santos of New York City, and they're saying that, I mean, the Dallas Morning News is basically saying, you know, you cannot have a man in Congress who makes up things like this in his background, and you know what? They're right. We shouldn't.
Yes.
But I mean, that's not a good thing to have people in government who lie about their background. That's not a good thing. I agree with that. But now you have a president of the United States who is constantly making these things up. And I'm just, you know, I wonder if anybody's going to tell the Democrats, be careful what you wish for, because if all of a sudden it is a problem to make up things in your background, well, what's going to happen to Senator Warren? What's going to happen
yes.
to President Biden? So, I mean, it's crazy, but when you hear this man make up these stories, it's like you're saying, this is not real. This cannot be happening. Honestly, Bill, I don't remember a president of the United States ever being I don't know what the right word is, but being that way with the facts. I mean, do you remember anybody like that? I don't.
No.
I mean, Hubert Humphrey was a great storyteller, I remember. Ronald Reagan was a great storyteller. But they didn't make up things about their background, Bill.
That's right. They didn't make up things about themselves. I think the people are very casual about the truth. And remember that our students in the rotten schools that have developed since the 1960s are taught that, well, there really isn't any such thing as truth. It depends on your point of view, your narrative. It could be my truth, but no, that's not true. There's the truth. And the purpose of a university is to search for it. I think that's in the past also. But we are with a president who is not only impaired, and he is impaired. I mean, he just drifts off periodically, but a man who can't stick to the truth. And, you know, again, I go back to the embassies in Washington sending out information. Or just a few days ago, you saw that the very important Prime Minister of Japan was visiting Mr. Biden in Washington, and I thought, in fact, I even said to my wife, I wonder what he is going to go back to Japan and say to his own government about President Biden. Is he going to say the man falls asleep, or he didn't seem to be listening, or I don't know if we can trust a man like that to lead the free world? He's going to be saying something, and I think we really are not only involved in very bad domestic policies, but we really are involved in a deterioration in the confidence that other people have in our word and our good faith and in our abilities. I think that the word crisis is overused, but if that's what we have today, then that's a crisis.
Yes, yes. And before we get to the documents, you mentioned Japan, and you wrote an article about this here in the last couple of days about how Japan is rebuilding its military.
Yes.
Because they see what's happening in their region. Actually, I'm kind of happy to see that, Bill, because
oh, yes.
I think that because it shows that not just that they may or may not trust the United States, but I think they need to defend themselves. And the idea that they're always going to be defended by the United States is something that I've always felt that too many of these countries, these European countries in particular, have grown accustomed to being defended by the United States. It's time that they start defending themselves, Bill, or at least have the resources to defend themselves. Japan is a very rich country. Why not build up their military, Bill?
Well, they have had a tradition since World War II that came close to pacifism because of what the war did to them. And, of course, they are aware that they started it. But it almost destroyed Japan, and the casualties were ghastly. And they really were very reluctant for many decades after World War II to build a strong national defense. They do have a navy, but it's not that strong. They feared what might happen, that they might become a militaristic country again, and they were opposed to it. But now they are really offered very little choice, because China, which is an enemy of Japan, is rising. It is rising with great determination, with great abilities. And I think that the government of Japan saw that they must, regardless of any feelings about the past, that they must rearm themselves. And they're doing it, and I happen to agree with you. I'm for it. It has to be watched carefully, but I'm for it because China may very well make a move in Asia, and they have got to be part of any defense.
Right. Well, I certainly hope that Australia and New Zealand, a couple of other countries, particularly New Zealand, a country that has depended a great deal on being protected by the United States. I hope they start thinking that way too, because they're a heck of a lot closer to Taiwan than you and I are, Bill.
That's correct.
And, you know, if there's shooting going on in that part of the world, New Zealand is not that far away. Australia is not that far away. Japan is not that far away. South Korea is not that far away. Sure. And these countries, they cannot rely on the United States. Well, in the case of Taiwan, we don't even have a treaty to defend them, Bill.
That's correct. That's something many Americans, I don't think, are completely aware of. We have no mutual defense treaty, which means we're not obligated to do anything. But I think there's a wide recognition, a bipartisan recognition, actually, that we have to be part of Taiwan's defense, or we give up control of the Western Pacific to a very hostile country. The Australians are aware of this. They are very concerned. They're building up their defense. It feels very much in a way like the late 1930s when Japan was doing the same thing, building its military while other people were kind of not regarding it as a true crisis. The situation with China is extraordinarily fluid. We really don't know what is going on inside the Chinese government. On the one hand, they are building this mighty force, especially a naval force. On the other hand, China itself is somewhat unstable. It's a very, very hard country to govern. It's huge. It has vast territory. But even though they have problems, and they are having problems keeping up with some manufacturing, even though they are a vastly more powerful country than they were just 10 years ago, and we have got to recognize the implications of it, if they miscalculate and attack Taiwan, we are in for a really very, very serious situation.
That's right. And in fact, they've done some war games showing that there could be some real losses of American troops. I mean, it could be very, very serious. But I think it was, what was that expression about keeping your powder dry? That, you know,
that was
the best way. Yeah. There's an expression that goes like that.
Well, there are several of them from the same school of that. Keep your powder dry is an expression in itself. Then there's praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. That has pretty much the same connotation, that you've got to be ready. I mean, the whole deterrent power of the West is built on the idea that we are ready for war and that we will engage in war if attacked. And I think that deterrent idea is being tarnished by this administration.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, let's talk a little bit about this administration, because a week ago when we did our podcast, we weren't talking about documents. And all of a sudden now we have documents. There's three of them. And some people suspect that there may be more. And, you know, we all know what happened. They found these documents at an office, at the home, in the garage, and all of that. But there's a couple of things that I wanted to bring up, Bill, and get your reaction. Number one, these documents actually belong to President Obama, his administration, that is.
Yes.
Joe Biden was the vice president, but he had no authority to take these documents. These are really President Obama's or his administration's documents. Which then leads me to my next question is, this office that is supposed to be keeping track of these documents, I don't get the feeling that they had a sense of urgency about finding these documents, Bill, that have been away from them for 6 years. I mean, these documents have been somewhere for the last 6 years, and this office that whose job it is to keep track of these documents, Bill, I don't know. I don't see any urgency in looking for these documents. But then on the other hand, they were pretty urgent with President Trump. I'm not justifying President Trump. I'm just looking at the whatever they're called, the archives or whatever they are. They didn't seem to have the same urgency with these documents, Bill.
No, they didn't. And I think it's kind of assumed that the investigation into President Trump's mishandling of some documents is really a political investigation designed to keep him from running for president in 2024. I don't know if they have any such concern about President Biden, but I don't know what's in the documents. None of us does, except the people who are going through them. The level of classification, which is important, what they actually contain. But the story here is that he was criticizing, the president was criticizing Donald Trump for being sloppy with the handling of classified documents that should have been returned when his administration ended. And the Justice Department investigated. There was, as you pointed out, a raid on Mar-a-Lago, which was humiliating to President Trump. And it's being conducted as a criminal investigation. And here they find out that President Biden did exactly the same thing. There may have been certain other circumstances, but it doesn't change the basic story that documents that were highly classified, that are the property of the people of the United States, were just bandied about. So far, as you pointed out, there are three locations that are involved, and it has to get worse. And no, and I have to say, I'm semi-pleased with the press that some of the reporters at the presidential news conferences are beginning to ask tough questions about the Biden administration. There are people, including very important advisors, who like David Gergen, who are warning this could be the end of President Biden as a future candidate. It is ironic that the exact same charge is being made against Biden as was made against President Trump, and yet it hasn't dawned on the administration to just put the documents in the right place. I mean, there's even space in my garage next to my Honda. We can store them there. It's a very secure place. I have a lock on the door and all the rest. But it is the imagery. The image of the Biden administration is a very poor one. And I think that one of the things, ironically, that is keeping the president from being pushed out of office, even by his own party, is the realization that Kamala Harris would be president. And I think people are realizing that that would not be a happy day for the United States of America. So what a mess we are in. We really are.
Yeah, we are. We are in a mess. And I think it's kind of ironic because I agree with you. I think the sending the FBI to President Trump's home, I always thought it was overreaction. I thought it was overkill. We had never done that before, crossed that line before, where you send the FBI into the home of a former president. I mean, it was really a risky, irresponsible move in my view, and I said so back then. And now, so how ironic is this that, you know, I wonder how many Democrats who were popping champagne back in August thinking, oh, we finally got Trump. I wonder how many of them are now saying, my gosh, are coming to the realization that we're talking about documents now that have nothing to do with Trump, that have to do with Biden. But how ironic all of this is. And there was a great article by Kimberly Strassel in the Wall Street Journal. She's a great political pundit.
Oh, yes.
And
sure.
She was basically saying that the attorney general is in a no-win situation because he cannot treat one party different than the others. Because even though there may be technicalities, differences between the two, for the average American watching this, what they're saying is both of these guys have documents, and you better treat them equally, or otherwise, you know, half of the country is going to be very angry, Bill.
That's exactly right, and I think that's what the administration is afraid of. You know, I keep on stressing on my website that the 2024 presidential campaign has already begun. It began the day after the last midterm. Now, in olden times, the campaigns didn't begin until the year of the election. Jack Kennedy announced for the presidency in 1960, which was the year of the election. Now, here it is, 2 years before the election, and already people are out running, even if they have not announced formally. It is obvious that Governor DeSantis of Florida is running. It's obvious that the president wants to run. It has been obvious that Donald Trump wants to run, but I don't know what's going to happen now with his legal status. So it's all up in the air, but other candidates are making moves to go out and speak to states that are very important in the primaries. And we're not going to be given, any time at all to contemplate our situation. They're going right into the campaign. It will be one of the most important campaigns, I think, in our history, because we have to end the sheer mediocrity that surrounds the United States government these days.
Yeah. I would think, Bill, that most Americans, and I may be in that position myself, are hoping that with this document incident between Biden and Trump, that maybe this is the opportunity to get rid of both. And yes, to have two brand new faces in 2024. You know, that may be what people are saying. Okay, let's just get, you know, let's just forgive them. You know, nobody goes to jail. We say that we're reckless and we maybe do some work with the archives, make sure they have better record keeping, and let's move on. Maybe this is what most people are saying, Bill. I kind of feel that way, to tell you the truth.
Well, I feel that way, too. That I don't want to see Biden go on. If there was a decent vice president, I would say it would be a good time for him to resign, but he won't. He doesn't feel he did anything wrong in the case of the documents or in anything else. And he still has a claque in the American press that wants to see him reelected. And I see nothing pushing in the other direction right now. In the case of President Trump, he is a very bright man. The polls show that most Americans don't want him to run again. And I really wonder whether, given all the circumstances, he wants to put his family through another campaign, because it will be absolutely brutal and he will not have the press on his side. And that is, you know, it's another discussion, but the role of the press is very important here. I would like to see both of these men gone from public life. You know, I'm reminded of the old French proverb, and no one knows exactly where it originated, that the graveyards of the world are filled with indispensable men. We must not begin to think of anybody as indispensable. Nobody is indispensable. And yeah. I think it is time, as you pointed out, for the country to move on a little bit and get a little bit more modern and a little calmer in its politics.
Yes. No, I think so. And I think this would be actually a great opportunity for President Trump to look at the situation and say, you know, I was correct in what I said about the FBI and Twitter. I was correct about what I said about how they were, you know, about the election. Not that they sold the election, but they were, you know, pushing one side or the other. The media has done itself a tremendous amount of damage. I don't see how they could recover from this. So maybe a couple of new faces in 2024 could get us talking about something else. But I do think, though, Bill, before we move on from Biden and Trump, something's got to be done about this Office of Documents, the archives or whatever they're called, because these people, I think they're a big part of the problem, too, Bill.
Oh, yes. This is a perfect example of executive overreach. And the fact that we put so much power into executive offices in the federal government, and we just then forget about them. And nobody is watching the store. Now, the Republicans are now in control of the House of Representatives, and they will, by at least have promised, to begin a number of investigations, which they can do with their power as a majority, a number of investigations that will either alarm Americans further or maybe pacify them if not that much is wrong. But I suspect that these investigations are based on work that they've done over a period of months, and they're going to turn up some very disturbing things.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we've learned, Bill, before we take a break, one thing that we've learned is that renting a house in Delaware can be pretty expensive.
Oh, yes.
I just saw some allegations that Hunter Biden was paying like $49,000 rent for that house. I mean, that's a very nice-looking house. I'm sure it's in a very exclusive neighborhood. But I don't know of too many houses that look like that that cost $50,000 a month, Bill. Maybe I'm wrong. But the landlord of that house was renting it for a pretty good price, Bill.
Yes, well, it's a big mansion, as you can see, and one wonders, I think it's an important thing to wonder about, that Joe Biden has spent his entire adult career in government work, and yet on government salaries, he has been able to buy a Corvette, not a cheap car, to live lavishly in very, very important residences. And nobody wants to ask any questions. And even with the Hunter laptop and other evidence about Hunter Tiden, nobody wants to ask, how did the family get so fabulously wealthy? If the same question was asked about Lyndon Johnson, but never answered. But I think that is one of the stories here that if the press were responsible, and that may be a pipe dream these days, the press should be asking.
Yeah. Well, of course, the problem with the story about the rent in Delaware is that some people are suspecting that this is how the money was flowing from Hunter to his father, that this is how it was going through the rent of that house. That's the allegation. Again, it's an allegation. But at this point, Bill, I'm not sure what to believe anymore because there's so many crazy things floating around. Let me take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we got a lot more to continue our conversation with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, just looking at this amazing story of Joe Biden. Anything else you wanted to add, Bill, to the story of the documents? I guess I meant to ask you, did you find any at your place, Bill?
Just minor things that I had in the CIA, like the plans for the atomic bomb. Yes, okay. I had one. Yes, in fact, I found it. It is the strangest thing. I found it on a bookshelf next to a biography of J. Robert Oppenheimer. I mean, it was wow. It was right there, and I immediately called the government and said, I have plans for the atomic bomb that anyone can use to blow up the world, and they said, we'll think about it.
Yeah, we'll think about it, or the archives. Yes. The Office of the Archives was too busy to get back to you, Bill.
Yes.
Or whatever. Yeah. No, it's crazy. It's crazy. A lot of people are speculating, Bill, and again, it's all speculation, that there will be more boxes. I have no idea, but I wouldn't be surprised if next week when we chat, we found out that there were more boxes than the ones we already know about, Bill.
Well, there could be. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But I think that now with the Republicans in charge of the House, there will be multiple investigations that will involve not only these documents, but will involve other possible alleged improprieties on the part of the president and his family. And I hope they really pursue this. You know, we only have a window, a known window of 2 years. Because we don't know what's going to happen in the 2024 election. And I think the Republicans should do exactly what they said they would do, investigate everything, because it's long overdue, very much overdue. The press doesn't do its job, as I mentioned earlier. We can't expect a free press to do the investigations for us, so the Republican Party is going to have to do them. And it could be 2 years in which we see one scandal after another.
Sorry about that. I didn't hit the right button. No,
sometimes
I hit the wrong button. I get excited. but one thing that we did learn is that there are apparently there's no record of who visited this house.
Yes, there is no visitor's log. That's a very important point.
I'm just wondering how that can be, Bill.
Well, somebody didn't want one, and this is a house in which the president stayed. But there should be a visitor's log. If anything were to happen to the president there that was suspicious, you would want to know who has been around. I cannot understand how the Secret Service could have allowed the president to stay in a place under American jurisdiction where there was no visitor's log. It's just a terrible sloppiness. You know, we make the assumption that things are well done in government. We kind of allow the government to have the benefit of the doubt. But boy, what you often find is things that are not well done at all and need a great deal of upgrade. The same thing is true of other institutions. We assume that hospitals are up to level, doctor's offices. When I was a kid, nobody questioned the schools. The schools had a good reputation and they were turning out a good product. Now, most thoughtful people have really great doubts about the schools. I read this morning that the new Democratic governor of Arizona is going to try to restrict school choice in Arizona. Arizona has the best, most extensive school choice program in the country, a model for other states, and the new governor is going to try to restrict it, obviously because the Democratic Party is controlled by the teachers' unions. And yet there is no big story being reported. Again, the press will just avert its eyes.
Well, the good news about Arizona, because I read that story too, the good news about Arizona is that Arizona does have a Republican majority in their state legislature. And hopefully that will prevent the governor from doing that. But yes, you're right. I mean, they have a very successful school choice program, and why would they want to do away with? But I did. There was another note that I saw, Bill, that the Secret Service, when they say that there are no records of visitors, that's not actually true. That may be just something that the White House is saying, because the Secret Service does have records, which is what I always thought that they did.
Yes.
So it may turn out to be another of these stories that gets misreported. But I have to believe that they have some record, because I remember one time when the first President Bush was running for president, when he was Vice President Bush and he was running for president, that he came to Dallas and I had my picture taken with him. And before I could get close to then Vice President Bush to get a photo, a couple of days before, they called me and they say, "What is your your driver's license?" And they actually did a quick background check on me. And all I was going to do, Bill, was take a picture with the Vice President running for president, Bill.
Yes.
So you would think
yes.
that if a person goes into the president's house, that they, or you know, his vacation house, that they would have some record of who that person is. Now, they don't have to publish it, because it could be an old buddy from high school who doesn't want the publicity. I understand that. But you would think the Secret Service knows who's in that house, Bill.
Well, yeah, I would hope so. But I think sometimes we depend a little too much on people without asking questions, not only in government but in other areas of American life. And that is the job of the press. The job of the press is to ask questions, to mm-hmm. always be skeptical, not McCarthy-like, but skeptical. There are very few questions being asked. There are very few questions being asked about policy. We just got through a political campaign without a single discussion of foreign policy. This 10, 15, 50 years ago would have been unheard of. That would be the main subject, our international situation. And yes, I think competence will be on trial in the 2024 election. And that's one of the reasons why I hope that Governor DeSantis runs, because he is a super competent governor, at least so far. Something can happen. But so far, he has really run a masterful administration in the state of Florida, and it's his greatest recommendation for the White House.
Right, that's right. Bill, just a quick note about this next topic. Today is Martin Luther King Day, not actually his birthday. That was yesterday. But we celebrate the day today, and, he was obviously a great man who I think made the country better, and he gave us that great quote about, you know, judging my children by their character, not their skin color. That's his signature quote, I think, of his whole career. But I don't get the feeling that today's Democrat Party believes in that anymore, Bill. I tend to think that they believe more in that race is everything. And so I sometimes see these marches remembering Martin Luther King, and all these Democrats attending these marches, but a lot of times what they say in public is not consistent with what Martin Luther King used to say, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. Well, you make the excellent point that the Democratic Party no longer believes in that admonition of Dr. King to judge people by the content of their character and not the color of their skin, because you see that the party is into identity politics as the basis of their campaigns. I mean, why was Kamala Harris chosen to be vice president? She checks off the important boxes. She is female. She is a person of color. That's two big boxes that are checked off. And that's the way the country is being run. You are judged now by the group you're part of, not the content of your character.
Yes. Well, I feel sorry for the press secretary, but I think she falls in that same – I think the same thing you said about Kamala Harris applies to her, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the question always must be asked, of all the people in the country who would be eligible for that job, why did the president pick somebody who clearly was not qualified? I mean, there are other people, and you see this happening. Now, sometimes a president or any other executive will get surprised, and somebody will be appointed to an office, and we later learn that they had done certain things or said some things in life that are embarrassing. But it is something to avoid. We cannot just casually go into the 2024 election campaign, and that's both parties, considering what just happened to the Congressman Santos on Long Island, who was found to be a fraud. We cannot simply depend on other institutions to vet candidates, to examine each detail of the record. We have to do that ourselves as voters and as citizens.
Yes, that's exactly right. But I think, also the Secretary of Transportation, there's another example of identity politics where a man who had no experience whatsoever in the very complicated field of transportation. I mean, you talk about somebody, I mean, he is completely, he's so deep that he doesn't know how deep he is, Bill.
Well, that's right. This is a man who I'm sure I have nothing against him personally. To the best of my knowledge, he's a fine man, but he is not a man you put in charge of such a critical agency as transportation, which requires really on the part of the secretary a vast working knowledge of the transportation network, which he does not have. I mean, he's been away on vacation several times when something important has occurred. But again, you have so many people in the country who are qualified to work in transportation, who have a superb knowledge of transportation, and they pick a man who's greatest career accomplishment was to be mayor of Notre Dame, Indiana. And that you're up on the federal level, you're in the real big leagues. You have to know how to play big league ball, and he doesn't.
Right. Well, but especially transportation, Bill, at a time when we were coming out of the pandemic and everybody knew that there were going to be supply chain issues, that there were going to be transportation issues. And I would have expected the Biden administration to go out in the marketplace and find a good Democrat. I understand you have to find somebody from your side of the aisle, but they could find a good Democrat with experience in transportation. I'm sure there must be a bunch of those guys, Bill.
Well, it's certainly true. You have governors who have run transportation networks in their own states. And you have mayors who have done the same thing, but Buttigieg is way out of his depth. He's engaging in on the job training, which is something you should never have for a cabinet officer. And he's not the only one. There were others. The Secretary of Energy, former Governor Granholm, also does not seem to know what energy is, or maybe he thinks electric cars will be powered by Vaseline. That's a possibility. There is just not the sense of authority.
Right. And the Secretary of Commerce, I think they picked the governor of Rhode Island, I think. Apparently, again, a very nice lady. But if you're going to pick somebody for Secretary of Commerce, shouldn't you pick somebody from a state that is actually creating jobs, Bill? Look, Rhode Island is a beautiful place. I know that it's a small state, and people tell me it's a very nice place to live, but it's not exactly a job creator bill, not exactly the place that creates a lot of jobs, you know?
Well, we haven't seen too many job creators around the country, but I do know that there is one in the state of Florida. His name is Governor DeSantis. We have another in the state of Virginia whose name is Glenn Youngkin. I'm eager to have an election campaign in 2024 between DeSantis and the governor of California, Newsom, because you would have a contest between the worst governor in America and the best governor in America, and let's see if the press can figure it out. Are we on?
No, I said it would be very interesting for them to hear what they've done for their states.
Well, yes, that's what I mean. I'd love to hear Gavin Newsom up there against Governor DeSantis of Florida and say what he's done for California, because right. California is the largest out-migration state in the country. People are flooding out of California. Florida is the biggest in-migration state in the country. People want to live there because of the excellent conditions that have been created by Governor DeSantis. It would be a fascinating campaign.
It would be. Another big reason, there's some speculation, too, that, again, speaking of Governor Newsom, there's speculation out there that these documents were planted to get rid of Joe Biden and to pave the way for Newsom to be the nominee in 2024. There's also a lot of talk about that. I don't know how true that is, but there's a lot of talk about that. But Newsom also has a big problem in California, and that's something like a $30 billion deficit that he's going to have to deal with. And I don't think he's going to get a lot of money out of this Congress. So he's going to have to figure out how to manage that deficit, which means they're going to have to cut back a lot of their expenses and a lot of their programs. So he may not be real popular in about 6 months, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. And once again, you find the situation where a governor has so mismanaged things, and yet he is being talked about seriously as a presidential candidate. On the basis of what? What are they going to say about him? You have a situation in California, not only an out-migration situation, but a deterioration of the life of the people in the states, in the state. And if there's a debate, let's say he is nominated by the Democratic Party, how do they defend him? What does one say? Do you make it up? Do you say that really it's being misreported by the press? What does one say? I just hope that the Republicans don't blow it in 2024 in their nominating process, because they work hard to lose elections, and they succeed very often. But they need an I think a ticket of Governor DeSantis and Senator Scott of South Carolina, Rick Scott, would be a terrific, terrific ticket. It would bring together two candidates with exceptional records and exceptionally good public images.
That's right. No, that would be a great ticket. That would be a great ticket. I agree with you. A couple of other stories, Bill, I want to get into as we run out of time. I read this at Urgent Agenda, and I thought this was really funny that they don't want people holding hands in the UK. I thought that was pretty
funny.
Well,
this is
what's that all
about?
Yeah,
this is serious. It's about time we caught up. They have some of these school systems or the schools in the United Kingdom have banned touching between students, to include handshakes, kissing, anything other evil and foul deeds, because they say that when two people touch each other, anything can happen. That was the explanation that was given. Yeah, I guess that's true. And if you walk out your door, anything can happen. So maybe we ought to bar doors in the United States. This is another one of these examples of the stupidity and the immaturity of wokeness to say you cannot touch another student. I mean, what about tag games like baseball where you get tagged? Will they send you to prison if you tag somebody? I mean, it is absurd on its face, but it is the mentality of a generation of educators that I find absolutely frightening.
That's right. One last thing, Bill. I am happy with Speaker McCarthy. It seems like he's often running in the right direction. I'm happy with what he's doing. Obviously, we have to wait a little bit longer, but, you know, a week ago, he had just been selected at the last minute at midnight. But a week later, I like what he's doing. I like the way he communicates. I'm actually excited about him. I think he may turn out to be pretty good, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. He was underestimated. I think that the charges against him by members of the party simply reflected their own isolation on one wing of the party. And I think he, at least in his first week, as you said, he's conducted himself very well, stuck to the issues, knows how to articulate the issues. Oh, by the way, I said Rick Scott of South Carolina a few minutes ago. I meant Tim Scott, the senator of South Carolina. But in the case of the speaker, yes, I mean, the House could have degenerated quickly into a barroom brawl, and it didn't. And I think we have to give his leadership some applause on that.
Yes, I think Rick Scott is actually the senator from Florida, right? So they couldn't run together, right? They couldn't run together on
oh,
the
no,
same ticket.
Oh, no, no, Rick Scott is an opponent of Governor DeSantis, so he wouldn't pick him, but they are from the same state. That's true.
That's right.
But Governor Tim Scott, the African-American senator from South Carolina, would make a terrific vice presidential candidate on a DeSantis, ticket. I think the Republican Party has remarkable opportunities in 2024, but it had remarkable opportunities last year as well and didn't exploit them. I hope that will be different.
Right. Of course, you know, Bill, that if Senator Scott is selected, you know that that congresswoman from Missouri is going to say that he's a prop.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, Congresswoman Bush of Missouri will say he's an Uncle Tom, he's a prop, he isn't his own man. He'll wreck the country. Oh, yes. Well, that's that whole notion that in the eyes of the woke crowd, members of minority groups have to act a certain way to prove that they're legitimate or genuine.
Right.
No,
that kind of gets back to my point about Martin Luther King. I don't think
that's
the idea that Martin Luther King had in mind, that all African-Americans would think the same way, Bill.
Yes. And I think we are approaching a time of race in America where it is incumbent upon the press to really bear down and look carefully at the administrations of black-run cities, not because of the racial aspect, but to make sure that they are applying the same standard as they would to any other mayor. And I don't think that's been the case so far.
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, some of the worst-run cities in the country's history are some of these cities, you know, unfortunately run by many of these, like Chicago. I mean, that's Exhibit A of
Lori
what I'm
Lightfoot.
Talking about. I mean, that lady there is a disaster. Bill, have a great week. I don't even know what to predict anymore. I mean, maybe by next week, maybe Kamala Harris will have a bunch of documents in her home, Bill.
Maybe. She's one of the most frightening figures I've seen in presidential politics. I mean, she's keeping the president in his office, but who knows what's going to turn up. But I don't usually make predictions. I think it's foolish, but I think we can agree 2023 is going to be a very bumpy year, and it's going to then walk right into a presidential election campaign. And we pray that it is a safe campaign for everyone and that the best person will win, but we're going to be put through a test.
That's right. It's going to be a bumpy year in many ways, not just documents, but in other ways too.
Sure.
I think the economy is also going to at times be a little difficult. But Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful week. And we look forward to reading Urgent Agenda throughout the week. And thank you so much. It's always great to have you.
My pleasure. Looking forward to the next time.
All right. Thank you so much, our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of urgent agenda. You know, it's amazing. Who would have thought last week that we'd be talking about documents? I just wonder what we're going to talk about next week. I'm sure there'll be some other surprise. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.